Today's share is Masechta Gittin, Daf Nun Aleph, and we will get on Daf Nun Amabeis, two lines from the bottom, Rav Chanina Amar. As we had learned in the Mishnah, and then in the previous share, our Mishnah speaks about a situation where Reuven stole a field from Shimon, and then sold that field to Levi. And now Shimon is able to retrieve that field from Levi. But before Shimon had retrieved the field from Levi, Levi had invested into the field, and the field grew produce. And when Shimon takes back the field, not only does he take back the field, but he even takes the produce. Now Levi goes back to Reuven with a claim. Levi goes to Reuven and tells Reuven, "You sold me a field that was a stolen field, and you owe me for the money that I paid to you for the field, and you also owe me for the payris, for the produce that Shimon has taken as he has taken back his field." The Mishnah taught us that Reuven is obligated to pay to Levi, and that if Reuven doesn't have any available assets to pay, Levi may go to the Meshubadim, to the Lekuchos, to the people that Reuven had sold his properties to, because he has a prior lien. However, the Mishnah said that is only for the purchase price of the field. For the payris that Levi has a claim against Reuven, he cannot go to the Mishbadim. That he only could claim from the Bnei Chayrim. And Ula, in the previous year, explained that the reason for this rule is Lefish Enik Suvim. Since these are not obligations that are written, they don't have the Reuven, therefore does not, Levi does not have the right to claim them from Mishubadim. Our Gemara now begins with Rav Chanina's opinion. Why Levi has no right to claim the payris from the Lekuchos, from the Mishubadim of Reuven? And Rav Chanina says the reason is Lefish Enik Suvim. It's not a fixed amount. How much the payris are worth is not something that's fixed. And when there's a situation when something is not fixed, then you can't claim from the Mishubadim. The Ritva, in explaining Rav Chanina's opinion, says if something is not fixed, if it doesn't have a fixed value, it doesn't have a kol. We know, and we've discussed this, and we'll discuss this more, Mitzvah Hashem, that in order to be able to collect from Mishubadim, the important concept is there should be a kol, that people should be aware that this lien exists. And there's something which is not kesuvim, Rav Chanina suggests there is no kol. Or, says the Ritva, suggests the Ritva, even if this would be a situation where people were aware of this situation, since it's not a fixed amount, it's considered a situation where you can't collect from Mishubadim. Ask the Gemara, Ibailu, Rav Chanina. According to Rav Chanina, in order to be able to collect from Lekuchos, in order to be able to collect from the Chosum Mishubadim, is it required, Ketsuvim uKesuvim Boy, that you have to have both that it's fixed and that it's written, or Dilma, or all you need is Ketsuvim, that as soon as the amount is fixed, Alpha Pishen Ketsuvim, even if it's not written into a document, that would be enough to be able to collect from Mishubadim. And Rashi makes a very interesting statement. Rashi says that as soon as something is kotzuv, as soon as it's a fixed amount, even if it's a milval peh, even if it's not a document, even if it's not an obligation written into a document, the halach is you could collect that type of obligation from Mishubadim. Tosfos is very troubled with Rashi's pshat, because Tosfos says that we know, the Gemara says in Masechta Bava Basra, the halacha is you can never collect a milval peh, something that's not written to a document, and therefore saying that if it's a milval peh, it's not enough. Therefore, Tosfos explains that the situation here is not a regular milva. For if something is a milva, then of course it has to be written in a document. And if it's not written in a document, then you can't collect from Mishubadim. Because Tosfos explains, there are times when people borrow money and they specifically want that the transaction, the loan, should not be known. Everybody should know that I'm tight for money and I have to borrow money. And therefore, as we said a moment ago, to be able to collect from Mishubadim, there has to be a kol. And the explanation why there has to be a kol to be able to collect from Mishubadim is very fundamental. A kol is what we would call nowadays a title search. If I buy a property from someone, a title search is conducted to see if there are any prior liens on this property. That's what the kol accomplishes. And then when I still may buy the property, even if there are liens on the property, but I know what I'm getting into. The people who buy a property, in order to be held responsible, have to be able to know, because there's a kol. And therefore, a loan which takes place quietly, a milval peh, doesn't have the kol, and the people who, the lekuchas, who bought the mishubadim, cannot be held responsible. However, other situations, says Tosfos, like somebody who obligates himself to support his wife or his daughters, or other such transactions, there we don't need that it should be biksav, that it should be written into a document for it to have a kol. And that's the case, says Tosfos, that our Gemara is referring to, that perhaps as long as it's kotzav, as long as it's a fixed amount, even though it's not written into a document, perhaps Rav Chanina will hold, you could already collect from the kuchas. Toshma. So Gemara proves this from a Mishnah Masechta Basra. Ditmar. Mishnah Vehi Niach Shnei Bonos Uben. Someone passed away and he left over two daughters and a son. We know Midoy Raisa, only a son inherits from his father. And that's the case here. The one son takes the entire inheritance. However, since daughters were left over, the halacha is that the daughters are supported from the estate until they get married or they become boigris, 12 and a half years old, say Rashi. And when they get married, the estate provides them with a dowry. The dowry, our Gemara says, is Isur Nechosim, 10%. The Rishonim, the Gemara Masechta Basra, discusses how do we evaluate this 10% number. The Gemara says that if we know that the father had not been willing to give 10% as a dowry, that we don't give 10%. 10% is only given when we don't know what the father would have done. There's also a debate. Let's say the father had made himself known that he would want to give more than 10% of his assets as a dowry. Do we give more than 10%? Or is 10% the max? So the Mishnah says, Mishemais, if someone passed away, v'niach shtei bonos uben, and he left over two daughters and a son, the kadma rishona, and the first daughter is about to get married, and she takes the not least from the sochem, and she takes her 10% for her dowry. And v'loy speaker shnei levois, and before the second daughter gets married, at shemais ben, the son passes away. And now, since there's no son left, the halach is that the two daughters, yarshin, inherit their father. So the question is, does the daughter collect her 10% dowry before we divide the estate, or not? Amrav Yoichanan, shnei yevitra. The second daughter has given up her right for the 10%. And as the Rishonim explained, the Mishnah is specifically speaking about a case where there was originally a son. For if there was no son, and the two daughters were inheriting the entire estate, then there would be no question about dowries. They would just divide the entire estate, each one taking their half, and they would get married off the half that they own. The case that we are discussing here is a case where there was a son, and he did at the beginning inherit the entire estate. And the first daughter did take her 10%. The question is, does the second daughter first take her 10% and then they divide the rest of the estate, or not? And really, as the Mefarshim explain, the basis of this machloikis is at what point did the estate become obligated to give the daughter the amount for the dowry? Was it at the moment of the father's death? And therefore, even though circumstances now have changed with the death of the son also, the obligation that this girl, that there is to this girl, to the second daughter, to get her issa nechasim, her 10% doesn't go away? Or is the obligation at the moment of marriage? And the reason why Chazal made this rule is that in order that she should be able to have a dowry, in order to be able to get married. But now that she's getting a Yerusha, she doesn't need the 10%, she'll have money anyway with which to get married. Vamalei Rav Chanina. So Rav Chanina says to Rav Yochanan, G'day l'mezu amru. Chazal said, Maitzien l'mepanosa. We could collect from the l'kuchis for the dowry. Vei maitzien l'mezoinis. The halach is that the amount that is due to the girls, if they are collecting dowry money, they could collect from l'kuchis. The amount that they get for support day to day, they have no right. Vat amrit shnia vitra, and you're saying that the second daughter gave up her rights. If we know, say the Rishonim, that it's a lot easier to collect from Yerusha than from Lekuchis. So if we're saying, says Rav Chanina, that a girl could collect her Issa Nechasim from Lekuchis, from Nechasim Shibadim, she certainly should have the right to collect it from a Yerusha. Now ask the Gemara. V'panasa, this 10%, make its kitzi, is a fixed amount, however, michtav loiksivi, it's not written into any document. And yet, Rav Chanina is clearly telling us, the kometzio, that they have a right to collect this amount, this Issa Nechasim, from Lekuchis. So we see that clearly the Brice is teaching us, you don't have to have a situation of michtav chtivi, of something to be written into a document in order to be able to collect it. Answers the Gemara. There's no proof from here. Because Shani Parnosa, this rule that the girls are entitled to collect the Issa Nechasim, kivin this lakala, is something that's well known, and therefore command Ksivadami, it has the same status as something that's written into a document, which creates the kol, as we discussed earlier, and therefore it makes no difference if there is a formal document or not. Ula, as we said at the beginning of Shir, had taught us at the end of our previous year that the point that makes if you could collect from a Shibadim or not is a ksiva, if it's written to a document or not. Master of Hunabar Menoyach, Mesu. The Mishnah there, Masechta Ksubas, discusses the following situation. Reuven married a woman, Rachel, and Rachel had a daughter from a previous marriage. And Reuven accepted upon himself that he would support this girl, the stepdaughter. Now Reuven passes away, and Rachel gets married for 5 years, he accepted it upon himself. Now Reuven passes away, the marriage terminates, and Shimon marries Rachel, and he makes the exact same deal with this woman. So Rachel's daughter is getting support from her two stepfathers. Masav Rav Hunam HaMenoyach, Mesu, if these two men die, but in saying the Zionist Ben Nechayis Ben Nechayim, their real daughters, Reuven's daughters, Shimon's daughters, collect only from Bnei Chayrim. Vehi, but this stepdaughter, Nezoinis, she has the right to collect from Nechas Meshibadim. She has even a right to collect from Nechas Meshibadim. Why? Neshi Kibalas Chayv. There's a debt to her. And the halacha is that a debt is collected from Nechas Meshibadim. The question now is, this is a debt that wasn't written into any document. And if it's not written into a document, why is she, according to Ula, allowed to collect from the chosim Mushabadim. Answers the Gemara. Hachem Ma'iskinen. B'shekonim Yodai. We're referring to a case that this obligation, these men took upon themselves this obligation with a kinyan. And we have here Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos, how to understand what it means that they took on this obligation with a kinyan. Rashi says that the obligation is, since there's a kinyan, every kinyan is ultimately going to be written, and therefore it's like suvin. Tosfos says that just because there's a kinyan doesn't mean that it's going to be written. Tosfos rather says that a kinyan creates a kol, which is the exact same purpose of a ksav, of a written document, and therefore it's considered like it's ksuvin. This is the way Rashi explains our Gemara, that the question, as we're going to continue learning, is a question on Ula's opinion. However, Tosfos says that the question of Gemara, as we just learned, is not only a question according to Ula's opinion, but it's even a question according to Rav Chanina's opinion. Because Rav Chanina said, the point is that it has to be ketsuvim, it has to be a set amount. And Tosfos says that panosa, the amount it takes to support, is something which is not a set amount. Because as we know, the price of food fluctuates. And in fact, how do we understand, explain the Mefarshim, the machlokes between Rashi and Tosfos, if is this a question only on Ula, or is this a question even on Rav Chanina? Say the Mefarshim, that according to Rashi, this girl is only entitled to support her food, what she needs to eat and drink. That, even though there are fluctuations, could pretty much be estimated. But she's not entitled, the husband, the stepfather, did not accept upon himself the obligation to give her doctor bills if she chas v'shalom were to get sick. Doctor bills are certainly not ketsuvim, because we don't know if the person will get sick, hopefully they won't get sick, and we don't know if they get sick, what kind of illness and what kind of treatment will be required. And therefore, according to Tosfos, it's a situation of non-ketsuvim, because she's entitled to medical bills if she chas v'shalom should need them. And the question is even Rav Chanina. The Gemara says, since there was a kinyan, it creates a kol. Ask the Gemara, if there was a kinyan, banos nami, then the daughters, there was also obviously a kinyan for. And if there was a kinyan, why should the daughters not be allowed to collect their support from the chasam shabadim? Answers the Gemara, b'shekana luzeh, there was a kinyan for the stepdaughters, v'lekana luzeh, but there was no kinyan for the real daughters. Ask the Gemara, if this individual is doing kinyanim, my pascha, why is the Gemara assuming that he's only making kinyanim for the stepdaughters and not kinyanim for his own daughter? Rather, says the Gemara, there certainly is a kinyan. However, bas ishtoi, this stepdaughter, Rachel's daughter, the habishas kinyan, when they got married and she is already around, she could be the subject of kinyan, mahanaloi kinyan. However, bitoi, his own daughter wasn't yet born. And we know that ain't adam makna davish loy balaylam. You can't affect kinyanim for something that isn't yet in existence. Lemahanaloi kinyan. Says the Gemara, Mila iskinan, why can't we say that this Mishnah is referring to a situation that have a tavayu b'shas kinyan, that both of them were here b'shas kinyan? Vechidami, what does that mean? That both the daughter and the stepdaughter were alive b'shas kinyan, the gar shavahadra. It will refer to a situation that a man divorced a woman after she had daughter. That means Reuven married Rachel, and Rachel already had a daughter from a previous marriage. Then Reuven married Rachel, they had their own daughters, he divorced Rachel, and now he's taking her back. And when he's taking her back, she has both daughters that are their daughters and the daughters that are Rachel's daughters alone. So they're both here at that time. And in fact, says the Chassam Sofer, we can well understand the Gemara, that that's why, since he's making a kinyan for his stepdaughters, it makes all the sense in the world to say that while he's making a kinyan for his stepdaughters, he's also making a kinyan for his own daughters. The Chasam Sofer also uses this Gemara to explain, to paskin, a very interesting shaila. The halacha is that a woman who was divorced twice should not get married a third time. However, says the Chasam Sofer, what would be the halacha if a woman got married and divorced, and then she got divorced from a second husband, and now the second husband wants to take her back? And of course, the halacha is he can only take her back if she did not remarry in the meantime, because otherwise there would be an isser machzuk rishasai. Is that included in the isser of marrying someone who you divorced? Says the Chasam Sofer, from our Gemara, we have a clear proof that it's not included in the situation of somebody who can't take back a woman who's divorced twice. If this person you're taking back was divorced twice, but the second wife was your divorcee, then you may take her back. And our Gemara is the proof. So now we're back to where we started. Why is his daughter not going to be able to collect from a Shabbatim, only his stepdaughters? Says the Gemara, Ela bitoi de betnai bez nekachla. A daughter that the father has to support, the state has to support his own daughters, is because of a tanai bezdin. That's the rule that Chazal established. Therefore, lo mehanlo kinyan. The kinyan makes no difference. Das ishtoi, however, I'm not obligated to support my stepdaughters. The lab of tanai bezdin kachla. She's not eating because of a tanai bezdin. There, mehanlo kinyan. A kinyan is effective. Ask the Gemara. This doesn't make any sense. The chimigra gara, because she's eating, not just because the father obligated himself to give her food, but rather because Chazal require it, so that weakens her position. If anything, that should strengthen the real daughter's position. Ella says the Gemara, Bitoi, kivin de p'nai bezden kachla. Since the daughter is eating because of the p'nai bezden, and as the Mefarshim explained, number one, she's my daughter. So there's a very strong relationship. It's a father-daughter. A father's concerned about his daughter. Moreover, as we're learning now, the obligation for a person's estate to support the daughters comes from a tanai bezdin. Therefore, we have to be concerned that he gave her money in order that she should have what to live on. But that's a concern that we only have by the real daughter, where the obligation to support her is a very strong obligation. However, in a situation where she's eating, where it's a stepdaughter, so number one, the relationship isn't there, the same type of relationship, and furthermore, it's not that she's eating because of a tanai bezdin, there, we don't have to worry about tsrari atvasa. And as Tosfos points out, of course, tsrari atvasa is only a concern. It's not for sure that that's what happened. And therefore, from B'nai Chayrin, even real daughters have a right to collect their support. And we don't say for sure, Tzrari Atvasa. It's only when we're referring to Mishabadim, who, as we have been discussing, Chazal went to great lengths to protect the Mishabadim. Therefore, wherever there's a concern that the Mishabadim, perhaps, are not responsible, we don't make them responsible. Say the Mefarshim. So now we need to understand what it said in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that we don't support the almana, we don't support the daughters from the estate, from Mishabadim, from the Tikkun Olam. But now we're learning it has nothing to do with Tikkun Olam. It has to do with Tzrara Atvasa. Explains the Meram Shif that that's exactly what the Mishnah meant. What the Mishnah means to say is, Tzrari Atvasa is the reason why Chazal made Tikkun Olam that we shouldn't collect from the Mishabadim. So as we've been learning, we've learned so far two explanations why Peiris cannot be collected from Mishabadim. Either Ula's reason, because they're not written, or Chanina's reason, because they're not Ketsuvim. Toshma. So now the Gemara quotes a Braisa. Rab Nosson, Amasai Bizman Shikodim Mekhish Hashani Lashivcha Shorishin Avakodim Shivcha Shorishin or Mekhish Hashani Kaimim Nechasim Shabbatim. Reb Nosson goes back to the situation that we referred to at the beginning of our shir. And Reb Nosson says that Levi has no right to collect from Ruvain's Mishubadim only for the payris that were there after Ruvain sold those assets. But payris that were there before Ruvain sold off his assets, there Levi has a right to collect from those payris from the Mishubadim of Ruvain. And the question is obvious. It's still not ksuvim. It's still not ketsuvim. So what's the difference? At what point Ruvain sold off those assets? Alma, the reason is Mishum Dalai Kodimhu. The point is, at what point did Ruvain sell off those assets? Nothing to do with ksuvim, if they're written, or ketsuvim, or if they're fixed. Therefore, says the Gemara, Tanaihi. What we have to say is that actually this issue of why you can't collect from the payris is a machloikis tanon. The Tanya, as the Brisa says, ei mitzien lachilas payris ule shvach kakos ule mazin isha banos ben chosim shabodim mebnei tikkun oilem. And what does mebnei tikkun oilem means, says the Brisa, lefish ein ksuvim, because they're not written in a document, which is exactly what Ula said. Omer Rav Yosi says, what's the difference if they're written to a document or not? And therefore, rather, he says the factor is, as Rav Chanina said, so we see that the opinions of Ula and Rav Chanina are actually found in this Braisa, the opinion of Tana Kama and Rav Yosi. The Mishnah said, if somebody finds a Mitzia, he doesn't have to swear that when he approaches the person, he doesn't have to swear that, let's say I found somebody's wallet and I return it to him, and the person opens his wallet and he says, there's $100 in this wallet, but I had lost $200. Swear that you didn't pocket that $100. The luck is I don't have to swear. Rabbi Yitzchak, in a case where I say to someone, I come to someone and give him his wallet, and he says there were two wallets. And I said, the two wallets tied together, and I say there was only one. Nishba, I have to swear according to Rabbi Yitzchak, and the Gemara is going to explain what is the reasoning for Rabbi Yitzchak's psak. Certainly, all the Rishonim point out, the Ramban and other Rishonim point out, that even according to Rabbi Yitzchak, I would only have to swear if the person is saying a bori. He's saying for sure there were two. But if he himself, his claim is only a shema, it's not a definite claim, even Rabbi Yitzchak would agree that I don't have to swear. In a case, continues Rabbi Yitzchak, however, where Shnei Shvarim Kishurim Tzatzali, where I approach somebody with an axe that he lost, and he says, V'aloi Omer Lahaya Lecha, there was only one axe, ain't a nishba, I don't have to swear. My tama, shvarim, accent very often, menatchi hadodi, get disconnected. And therefore, it's very possible that there were two axes and they just got disconnected. On the other hand, kisim lo menatchi hadodi, wallets don't get disconnected, and therefore the owner could claim that if you found one, you must have lost the other. And the mefarshim ask a number of questions. One question is, why can't I have a migui that I could have said, you know what, I would have never given you anything if I know that this is the price to swear. So from here we say, and the Rishonim discussed this at great length, that a migui doesn't absolve one from making a shvua. And therefore by saying that I didn't have it, that's not called a good enough reason. This continues Rabbi Yitzchak saying, however, in a case where Shnei Shvarim Kishurim Metzasa, in a case, however, where the person who lost the oxen says, you found two oxen, and I agree, I say, hello, Metzasi, I indeed did find two oxen, however, I already returned one, there everybody agrees, hareza nishba, that I have to swear. This is certainly a situation of moida b'mixas that we're going to discuss later in the shir, that everybody agrees that a moida b'mixas midaraisa has to swear. Ask the Gemara, going back to Rabbi Yitzchak's original ruling, Rabbi Yitzchak lesley hamaitzim tzi lo yishava. Does Rabbi Yitzchak not agree when they take an oilam? Does Rabbi Yitzchak not agree? Well, we learned in our Mishnah that if somebody finds something, we don't make him swear, because if they're going to make me swear, I'm never going to return anything. And as the Mefarshim say, the concern is not, the Nachum Shtovet says this, the concern is not a concern that I'm going to lie. Of course people don't swear falsely. And of course the concern is, however, explains the Nachum Shtovet, people don't want to get involved. So here I'm coming to do a mitzvah. And if the price of doing the mitzvah will cause me the aggravation of having to make a shvuah, I just won't return the item. Answers the Gemara, Hu damak Rabbi Elazar ben Yitzchak. Yaakov. Rabbi Yitzchak agrees with the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov that a shvuah is very much in order. The Tanya, the Braisa says, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Amar, Pa'omim sh'odim nishba'al tanis atzmai. Sometimes a person has to swear even because of his own claim. Keitza, what does that mean? Mana lavicha biyadi. I approached an orphan and I said, I owed your father $100, v'chal tepris, and I have paid him already half of it. The aloch is, I raise a nishba, I have to swear, v'zeh nishba'al tanis atzmai. This is a situation where I'm swearing because of my own claim. It's considered like a mamesha aveda upater. And as many Rishonim explain, the point here is that I'm considered like a mamesha aveda because I didn't have to say anything to you. So the fact that I said that I did volunteer this information should not cause me to have to swear. And the Chasam Sofer points out that it's not a real mamesha aveda. Because by a Meshav Aveda, there's a concern that a person will not bother picking up the item. Here it didn't really involve me picking up anything, but it did involve my requiring to say something that maybe I shouldn't have to say. Ask the Gemara, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, Leslie Meshav Aveda Potter, does Rav Elazar ben Yaakov not subscribe to the concept of Meshav Aveda? And as most Rishonim explain, what the Gemara means to say is, Meshav Aveda is such a poshta svara, it's such an obvious logical concept, how could Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov disagree with it? Omer Rav, so Rav says, Rabbi Elazar is referring to a situation, b'ta'a noy cotton. It's a cotton. It's not that I just came and volunteered, but rather the minor orphan of this individual claimed that I owed the money. And therefore it's not just a Meshav Aveda. And the Rishonim say that either the cotton says that my father told me that you owe him $100. That's how the Ravid explains. The Ramban explains that the son says, I know for a fact I was aware of my father's financial affairs, and I know that this money is outstanding to my father. Ask the Gemara, cotton midi mishoshes pay? Does a cotton have the ability to make any claim? For Tanan, the Mishnah says, Einish bon, al tanis chereshoit v'kotem. We don't respond to these kind of claims. Answers the Gemara, my cotton doesn't really mean a minor. What it means is a godel. He's an adult. Ask the Gemara, so why carle cotton? Why is he called a cotton if he's really an adult? Answers the Gemara, the legabe mila de aviv, cotton who. As far as his father's affair, even if he's physically an adult, he's not an adult because he doesn't really know for sure the status of his father's financial affair. Ask the Gemara, if that's what the Bryce is referring to, the Yochatanis Atzmai, why is it saying that he's swearing? Why is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov saying he's speaking about it, he's swearing to his own claim? Tanis Acherim, he's responding to someone else's claim. He's responding to this orphan's claim. Answers the Gemara, it's referring to a situation of Tanis Acherim, that somebody else made the claim, v'dos atzmai, and he is accepting that. Ask the Gemara, all claims work that way. Any situation of moida b'mixis is a situation, kula tanas onami, our situation of tanas acherim, v'dos atzmaninu. So what is unique in this situation, what it should be a machloikis, between Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Rabbanan. So the Gemara now goes back to the trying to explain the machloikis of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. And the Gemara says that it's referring to a situation where it was indeed a cotton who made this claim. And the machloikis now to be explained this way. Elba the Rabbi Kamilski. They argue around something Rabbi said. Dama Rabbi. Rabbi asked a very fundamental question. Menei ma omra Torah moida mixis atani yeshava. Why did the Torah say that somebody who's a moida mixis has to swear? And there are a number of explanations in the Rishonim how to explain this question. Why did the Torah say that specifically somebody who's a Maida B'mixis has to swear versus someone who's a Kaifer HaKol? Rashi in the Masechta Baba Metzia says that isn't every Maida B'mixis somewhat of a Meshiva and a Veda, because every Maida B'mixis is volunteering something that he didn't have to volunteer. He should be considered a Maida B'mixis. Tosfos explains that the Gemara's question is that why does a Maida B'mixis swear? Doesn't he have a migui? That he could have been Kofer HaKol. If he wanted, he could have said, I don't know anything. And that's Rava's question. Memneima Amru Maida B'mixis Atana Yeshava. Why specifically a Maida B'mixis swears versus a Kofer HaKol? And the answer is Chazaka, because we have a Chazaka, then ain't other Meis. A person won't be chutzpah, won't be brazen in front of a person that borrowed him money. Rashi explains in Masechta Baba Kama, here this person did me a favor that he lent me money. How could I act improperly by denying it? Tosfos says, it's hard to lie in front of a person who knows that I'm lying here. The Haibakula Baila Mechfirilei. And therefore, really, the person wanted to deny the entire claim. Vadalai Kafre, and this that he didn't deny it, it's only because, as we just explained, Ein Adam may is Panav Afnei Chachayvay, a person has not have the chutzpah to do that. On the other hand, continues Rabba, Ubekulabai delay. And because of this Chazaka, the Ein Adam may is Panav, he really would have liked to admit the person did him a favor, the person knows the truth, and he would really like to admit that he owes the entire money. Why didn't he admit? He's trying to buy time because he doesn't have the money to pay off now. Sover, ad havele zuzi or pranele. Let me wait until I have the money and then I'll pay him back. That's what the Torah says. Ramishvule, he has to swear. Kech de loydele bekule, in order that he admit the truth that he owes the entire amount. So ask the Rishonim, if this person is really an honest person and he really wants to pay the entire money, he's just in a tough time where he doesn't have the entire money, so why do we have to worry? And why do we have to make him swear? When he'll have the entire money, he'll pay back. So Tosfos Rosh says a very important lesson. The person is really an honest person and he would not like to lie. But once a person begins to lie, it's a very slippery slope. And now he already lied, he's going to continue lying. Another explanation is that the person doesn't want to wait for the money. And therefore, we're concerned, why should he have to wait? Because I don't have money. The Chasam Sofer explains that he's going to say he doesn't own any of the money, he doesn't own the entire amount, just to buy time. If we accept that claim, then the malva may pass away, and all that's left are the Yisoyimim, who don't know anything besides what this person said previously, and therefore the Torah makes them swear. Says Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Sava. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, Loishna ba, v'loishna b'noi. It makes no difference the father or his son. Ein emeis. A person doesn't have the chutzpah to deny the entire claim. And since he doesn't have the chutzpah, he can't be considered a meishiv aveda. Rabbanan, on the other hand, hold by who the enemies. It's only regarding the person who lent them the money, the malv himself, that we have this chazaka. Alva b'noi meis, With the son, he doesn't have these feelings that we explained about a moment ago. And if that's the case, if he wanted to, he could have been koyfer hakol. If he wasn't koyfer hakol, it must be because he's a meshev aveda, because he's truly saying the truth. That there's an interesting machloikis hapoiskim. The machloikis is between the sma and the taz regarding someone who found a lost wallet. And he says that even though the Rabbanon and our Mishnah Paskin, that if somebody finds someone else's wallet, he doesn't have to swear. However, says the Sma, if the owner himself initiated the litigation by approaching the finder that with a claim that he observed him holding or finding his two wallets, then even the Rabbanon agree that he could be compelled to swear to substantiate his denial. The Taz, however, disagrees that, as we've been learning, that if we're going to make a person swear, there's always going to be concern. There's always going to be a concern that he will not want to return items that he found, and therefore makes no difference who initiated the conversation. There's an interesting Rambam who also discusses this concept that we're learning about Moedim and Mixis. What's going to be the halacha, discusses the Rambam, where I admit that I owe the entire amount, but I disagree on the due date, where the Malva says that I owe it today, and I say that I only owe it in 10 days. Is this going to be considered a situation of Moedim and Mixis? And the Rambam says that it is considered a Moedim HaMixis, because as the Chasam Sofer explains, always the concern is that I'm just, as our Gemara says, I'm always trying to buy time, but by buying time, the Malva may lose out, as the Chasam Sofer we quoted earlier explained. The concern is that by the time I do get ready to pay, the Malva is no longer alive, and the Yisoimim don't know the exact disposition of this debt. And therefore, says the Chasam Sofer, and that's the way the Magen Mishnah explains the Rambam, that Moedim HaMixis doesn't only apply to a situation where I admit that I owe part of the loan, but Moedim HaMixis also applies to a situation where I'm trying to say that the loan was due later than the time that the Malva says the loan was due.